Welcome to Tandem with the Random, a bi-weekly podcast featuring interesting people doing interesting things from all different walks of life. In this installment, we'll go into the archives and hear a January 2009 interview with independent musician Fox Ellipsis, who uses social media to promote his free shows throughout the United States. And we'll also break down Jon Bon Jovi's recent comment that Apple CEO Steve Jobs has personally killed the music industry. That's all coming up just ahead on Tandem with the Random for Monday, March 21st, 2011. Now, here is your host, Brian Kelly. Hello, and thank you for joining me for another episode of Tandem with the Random. My name is Brian Kelly. I'm a communications professional, amateur songwriter and musician, science and technology enthusiast, sports fan, and all-around pop culturist based in central New Jersey. And I'm also your host. My guest for this podcast is nobody. These last few weeks have been one of those times when real life gets in the way of side projects like this podcast, so it's a little difficult getting an interview together. So we're going to cheat a little bit and listen to an interview I did with independent musician Fox Ellipsis back in late January 2009. And we'll hear that interview with Fox Ellipsis in just a bit, but first, a few random thoughts. Earlier this month, New Jersey rocker, and I use that term very loosely, Jon Bon Jovi was featured in a story published by the London-based Sunday Times magazine. For some inexplicable reason, Jon Bon Jovi thought he was some kind of expert when it comes to the music industry, and made the following ridiculous comment. Quote, "Kids today have missed the whole experience of putting the headphones on, turning it up to 10, holding the jacket, closing their eyes and getting lost in an album, and the beauty of taking your allowance money and making a decision based on the jacket, not knowing what the record sounded like, and looking at a couple of still pictures and imagining it. God, it was magical, magical time. I hate to sound like an old man now, but I am. And you mark my words, in a generation from now, people are going to say, what happened? Steve Jobs is personally responsible for killing the music business." Unquote. Okay, let's break this idiotic comment down. First, starting with the final sentence. Really, John, Steve Jobs is personally responsible for killing the music business? If anything, iTunes saved the music industry from itself after it failed to adapt and was unwilling to adapt to the music download revolution taking place. Instead of trying to work with music sharing services like Napster and LimeWire on a legitimate business model for selling music downloads, the major labels just shut them down. And then instead of working on its own music download service, the music industry just started suing grandmothers and single mothers for illegally downloading music. The labels continued to cling to this idea that they could just keep on pushing $15, $20 CDs with 2 to 3 good songs on them on customers. Then along came Steve Jobs and Apple, and the 99-cent music downloads on iTunes. Yes, the major labels resisted, and they still aren't thrilled with Apple basically being control of the music download business. But Steve was convincing enough to get the major labels to buy into the concept of the iTunes Store. And today, it's the number one music retailer in the United States. Meanwhile, stores like Tower Records and Sam Goody, places where Bon Jovi likely would have purchased those albums with magical covers, and yes, I'm using finger quotes when I say the word magical from here on out, well, those stores are long gone. So how exactly is Steve Jobs killing the music industry? Also, I think artists who complain that iTunes and downloads have ruined the idea of the album are just lazy and probably incapable of producing a full album's worth of decent material. If anything, knowing that music buyers can now listen to samples of all the songs on an album before buying it should push artists to make every song worthy of being on the album. The music industry has always made this mistake with this idea that we just need a couple of hit singles on this album. How about encouraging artists to just make great music? And this thing Bon Jovi says about holding the jacket, how is that Steve Jobs' fault? Did Bon Jovi forget the fact that CDs, which came long before iTunes, essentially destroyed that magical moment of holding an album jacket? I mean, CDs have cover art, but it's not the same as a full-size album cover. And as CNET's technically incorrect blog points out, People have donated countless albums to Goodwill because they bought records based solely on their covers, and then they promptly got rid of them upon listening to them. To make such a pointed accusation that Steve Jobs is personally responsible for killing the music business is absurd, and really the accusation is blatantly false. More people buy music from services like iTunes and Amazon than any brick-and-mortar store. Have you noticed how small the music departments are in your local Best Buy or other physical retailer? Napster and LimeWire prove people want to download music, although with those services it was for free and illegal. At 99 cents for most music downloads, iTunes and Amazon practically do the same thing, but legally. If it wasn't going to be Steve Jobs and Apple, somebody else would have eventually created a viable, legal music download service. And it most likely wouldn't have been the major labels, because they still can't figure it out. If anything, the music industry itself is responsible for its own death, for not wanting to and not being able to adapt to changing times and consumer demands. And if Jon Bon Jovi thinks magic is missing from today's music listening experience, it's likely because there is nothing magical about most of today's mainstream music. Maybe music downloads have hurt big-time artists, but the evolution of digital music streaming and downloads has been huge for unsigned and under-supported major label artists who rely on the internet and social media to promote themselves. If Bon Jovi is an expert on anything, it's recording crappy music. He's been doing it successfully for nearly 30 years, and he's made a nice living for himself and his bandmates with that. He should count his blessings and be thankful for that success. But there are countless number of music artists, those who do create great music that maybe isn't specifically crafted for mainstream acceptance, who are likely very thankful for iTunes and other digital music streaming and download services. And for them, iTunes and other music download services are indeed magical. Right after this short break, we'll hear from Fox Ellipsis. Stay tuned for that.
You're listening to the Tandem with the Random podcast at tandem.wordpress.com.
In the absence of a guest for this podcast, we're going to go into my archives and listen to an interview I did with independent musician Fox Ellipsis back in late January 2009. At the time, he had just released his second double CD called Momentum. He's since had a third double CD titled The Road, released on a limited basis. Fox tours throughout the United States playing free shows at cafes and bookstores with sales of his $10 CDs, paying for his gas and expenses along the way. He either sleeps in his car or finds places to stay through Facebook or MySpace, which is also how he promotes his shows. So without further ado, here is my January 2009 conversation with Fox Ellipsis.
Fox,
yeah.
Thank you for doing this interview.
Oh yeah, my pleasure.
Could you start out by telling our audience a little bit about yourself?
Sure. After I graduated university from DC a few years ago, I decided to become a full-time musician, and I just went into it full steam ahead, and I spend every minute of my day, every day of my life working on this. I come from England originally, so I'm a little bit out of my depth in America. I'm kind of trying to figure it out, because I'm England is my home, so. But I'm doing okay now. I'm building up a fan base and playing music 24/7. Don't have anything else in my life. This is all I do. I'm like touring, recording albums, and you know, that's basically it. But yeah.
Well, how long have you been playing music?
Well, I've been playing since I was small, a little kid. But I've only done it professionally, where I had CDs to sell and whatnot, and I was making money from it and whatnot, for about 18 months, slightly more than 18 months.
Okay, wow.
Yeah.
I know you list many of them on your various websites, but who are some of your biggest influences?
Well, my biggest influence is definitely the 80s stuff, which is, you know, Tears for Fears, Depeche Mode, Duran Duran, and even Nick Kershaw, kind of obscure act from England, love him. And yeah, he was the
Wouldn't
first.
Wouldn't it be good to...
Wouldn't it be good? When I was 3 years old, it was all him. It was that was the guy I was dragging my mum to his shows as a four-year-old. It was ridiculous. But he was what made me get into music. And then, you know, also later on, like Crowded House, a little bit of Michael Jackson, New Order, the Pet Shop Boys, even more recently, Keane, Coldplay, bands like that are very much similar to what I'm doing.
Can you tell us about your CDs, how you go about producing them?
Sure.
And you have a new one available now.
Right, yeah, I just brought a brand new one out, so I have two now. Both of them are double albums. This is the first one. That guy, Brent Persia, he produced it and played all the guitars. We made a double CD of 36 tracks, so it's a really long. It's almost 3 hours long. And then the new album I produced myself, but it's pretty much in the same vein as that one. So then my brand new album is called Momentum, and it just came out. And again, it's a double CD and one which I produced myself. And I don't know why I overdo it with the double CDs. People are like, why do you release double CDs? But I go in with so many songs each time I record that I cut them down, but I still have two discs of material, so I can never cut it any more than that. Just can't bear to do it.
Yeah, you should really talk to Peter Gabriel, because that's why he takes 10 years to put out a CD, because he has like 50 tracks, and he decides he has to whittle them down for a decade.
Yeah.
Just put out a double CD.
Yeah, exactly, right? Why not? I agree.
I love Peter Gabriel. And
I love Peter Gabriel, too.
Okay, can you tell everybody a little bit about this particular U.S. tour that you're on and how you're using social networking sites like MySpace and Facebook to promote it?
Oh, basically, I find all of the fans I have on MySpace and Facebook. Like tonight, more than half of the people here came from Facebook. You basically just find people in each town you're playing who like the kind of music that I play, and then I invite them to the shows and tell them about it directly and market to them like that. And then, you know, for instance, with you came out to the show. And even if you only get 10 people come out, it's a good little crowd in a cafe. Play Borders, Barnes & Nobles, and over the whole course of the tour, I'll probably sell thousands of CDs, and it'll pay for the whole tour. The CD sales pay for everything. I don't really have any other income.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, is that your only instrument? Do you have any other
keyboards? When I record, I have a bunch of different stuff, but I have a couple different keyboards in the car, but this one is really good for programming different stuff, and, you know, it's the cheapest one I have, and yet it's still the best one for live shows. And I have a $1,000 one, and it just doesn't compare to this. It's old Casio. It can do a lot more than a lot of the other instruments can do.
What are some of the ones you have in your...
Well, I've used a Roland, and I've used a Korg, and they're always, you know, I guess perhaps it's because I was never an instrumentalist. I'm a vocalist, singer, songwriter, and so my keyboard skills are very limited. And this keyboard caters to someone who wants to have a really good sound and be able to program stuff, but without really knowing the ins and outs of the instrument. And my role in, like, I don't even know half the stuff that's in there. I can master this Casio easily and make it do whatever I want it to do. So.
Well, technology is obviously a major factor in how you record, promote, distribute your music. What is your take on how advances in digital recording, as well as the rise of social networking sites and digital distribution channels like iTunes, eMusic, Amazon, have helped pave the way for independent musicians such as yourself?
Absolutely. I mean, to an extreme degree. If it wasn't for being able to home produce an album that sounds similar to a studio album, being able to social network and find fans, if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be here. I would spend all my time trying to get major labels to listen to me so that I could try and get them to promote me. But because of this, I can just completely avoid the major labels, go straight to the fans, put my music out there as much as I can, and just hope that one of the labels maybe at some point notices, well, he's done pretty well for himself, we're going to pick him up. And I think that's a much better way of doing it, because even if that never happens, you're already reaching people, you're already playing to people. Instead of, you know, the old ways where it was like everyone's trying to get signed, these days it's like everyone's trying to build their fan base as big as possible. And, you know, to hell with record labels. If they don't jump on the bandwagon, then that's fine, because there's so many other ways to do it now. And so many bands you hear that made it big before they ever got signed, which is much harder to do without MySpace and Facebook. And
All right. Well, it's getting late. I'll let you go. But any final thoughts you'd like to share with our audience?
Oh yeah, just you know, if you're an artist out there who, you know, who wants to make music your living and stuff, I guess if you're willing to make some sacrifices in terms of lifestyle and, you know, rough it a little bit, just go for it. Because as soon as I went for it, I suddenly realized, oh my God, after all these years of studying and then working in this job and that, I suddenly realized this is what I was meant to do. And I always thought it was, and I was afraid. The minute I made it my entire life, I've never been happier since then, and it's the best 2 years of my life because of that. So I recommend every artist out there who wants to make it their life, just do it. Just go for it and see what happens.
Box, thank you very much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
That concludes this episode of Tandem with the Random. Hope you enjoyed this trip down memory lane. We should have a fresh interview ready for the next podcast. As usual, keep an eye on tandem.wordpress.com, follow us on Twitter at @twtrpodcast, or like Tandem with the Random on Facebook for show updates. We'll be back with a new installment on April 4th, 2011. Until then, this is Brian Kelly. Take care. The thoughts and views expressed by the host of Tandem with the Random are not necessarily shared by guests of the program. Conversely, the thoughts and views expressed by guests of the podcast are not necessarily shared by the host. For more information and show notes for the podcast you just heard, please visit Tandem with the Random on the web at tandem.wordpress.com.